panel is looking at the link between water sanitation and global health. And I'm going to just give a few kind of introductory remarks, and then we have an incredible panel here that I think it's going to be quite interesting to hear from their experiences and how they see this issue of the linkage of water to global health. And I think it's been alluded to and has been mentioned many times, while we have really had a huge focus on global health as a nation, and we are known for being a real leader in the world of global health, we oftentimes don't recognize the important role or give the same visibility to the important role that water has, both for its own sake, but also because of the very, very important link to global health. Water sanitation and hygiene are critical to global health, and particularly child health. As an example, in a recent Lancet article, they talked about the fact that diarrhea caused by unsafe water and sanitation is the second largest killer of children under five, and the largest killer, pneumonia, is also strongly related to poor hygiene. Every 20 seconds, a child dies from poor water and sanitation. We also know that malnutrition, which makes up about a third or about 3 million childhood deaths per year, very much related to this link of unsafe water, infectious diseases, diarrhea that then leads to malnutrition. Malnutrition leads to stunting and can have a long-term impact on children's ability to learn, to thrive, to be economically viable. So we know, and productive. And so we know that this link between water and sanitation and hygiene is really core. And as organizations here who all recognize the importance of looking not only at consequences but also underlying causes, this issue of access to clean and safe drinking water is key. Now, it was mentioned in some of the panel before that oftentimes people think about access to clean and safe water as the infrastructure and building latrines and wells and looking at the hard side of what it means to have access to clean and safe water. But I think one of the things, and I know our panelists will talk a lot about this, is that we also have to give the same amount of attention to the quote soft side, the behaviors. What are people doing that are deeply entrenched behaviors that contribute to poor sanitation and hygiene, and where we can make as much progress if we look at those aspects as well. Another key emerging theme that has cut through all the different presentations is important that the countries that we work in are also engaged as true partners, but also taking responsibility for these issues. And as an example, the government of Rwanda has committed to providing access to water and sanitation for its whole population by 2017, an incredible commitment by an African government. But I think it's also important that we recognize and make sure that these kinds of pledges are lived up to, that we work in partnerships in ways that allow governments to be able to not only make those kind of commitments, but keep those kind of commitments. And then we look at how can those examples be used beyond any one particular country and used to scale up these issues overall. So I think we have a wonderful opportunity to think about these issues, to look at how we can be real partners in increasing access to water, sanitation, and hygiene, looking both at what we can do on the hard side in terms of infrastructure, but also recognizing the real promise that comes by looking at some of the behaviors and changes in the ways that people approach these issues. And I think we have with us a panel that has individuals who can speak to all of those different issues and also talk about some of the incredible partnerships that we've had. So let me introduce our panelists briefly, and then I'm going to ask a few questions, get them started, and then we will also like to have audience participation as well. So to my extreme left is Jeff Seawright of Coca-Cola. We've talked a lot about the role that Coca-Cola has played He's the vice president for environment and water. Before coming to Coca-Cola, Jeff was a foreign service officer in the U.S. State Department. He was also a legislative assistant to U.S. senators, including Tim Worth and John D. Rockefeller IV. In 1999, he was executive director of the Climate Change Task Force, where he helped to negotiate the Kyoto Protocol. Next is Greg Allgood from Procter & Gamble. He's the director of the Children's Safe Drinking Water Program. Greg has traveled around the world teaching people how to easily turn dirty water into clean, drinkable water that will help prevent illness and save the lives of children. Dr. Allgood joined P&G more than 25 years ago. Through his public health efforts, he's encouraged P&G to begin the Children's Safe Drinking Water Program. And today, the program works with more than 100 partners like CARE and others to provide poor families with access to clean drinking water. And finally, Dr. Christine Moe from Emory University. She is the director of the Center for Global Safe Water. Her work has really been a focus for some of the local Atlanta partnerships and research here, and she's really done a lot to pull our different institutions together. Her research focuses on the environmental transmission of infectious agents, particularly foodborne and waterborne disease. She works on international water, sanitation, and health issues, and has conducted research in the Philippines, El Salvador, Bolivia, and Kenya. She's also been a consultant for the World Health Organization, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and on several projects that relate to this nexus of water, sanitation, and health. So I want you to welcome this very distinguished panel, and let's begin. So I think I would like to just start with a question to all of you, just briefly. You know, we've talked a lot about this link between global health and water. All three of you work on the, quote, water side. What do you think are some of the challenges to really making that link more firmly, and why does water get no respect? Christine.
Well, I think one of the very important things that we have to maybe realign our thinking about water and sanitation and health is that too often we think about water and sanitation as construction. As you mentioned, sort of the number of wells that are drilled or the number of latrines that are built. And we really have to change our thinking to think of it as services, especially sustainable services, services that are scaled up, services that are integrated with health programs. So I think that that's a really important way of changing our thinking about water and sanitation and also our metrics of success. You know, how do we measure a successful water and sanitation program? It shouldn't be the number of wells that were drilled, but really how it impacts health. For example, our new initiative with CARE about how we can use water, sanitation, nutrition, and health services to reduce stunting. So looking at health outcomes as the goal.
Great. Well, first, thanks for organizing this, Helene, and good to see you again. And it's great to be here with so many partners that P&G has been working with us for so long. And I'm looking out and seeing Jean Gangarosa and Rose Gangarosa. And I know at least myself and probably Christine wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. So thanks for all you guys have done. And I think it's true that water is sort of an orphan. Because it's so important to everything, it doesn't have its own home many times. And the theme of today, of integration of water with global health, is so important. In our Children's Safe Drinking Water Program, working with CARE and many of our other partners, you know, we really focus on measuring results. And we've shown that we can provide clean drinking water for 2 pennies a day. And that's important when you think about integration of water with a lot of global health initiatives. For example, we've heard a lot today about the critical importance of PEPFAR and refunding PEPFAR and how important it is for antiretroviral drugs to save people's lives. In Kenya, where we've been working for a long time and started working in a program that CDC started with now a group called the Society for Women's and AIDS Program, I was there visiting about 8 years ago, and a woman came up to me and she said, your water purification packet has saved my life. And I said, what are you talking about? And her name is Jemima Odo, and she said, I have HIV/AIDS, And people in this area with HIV/AIDS are dying from diarrhea. Because your immune system is down, the infectious bacteria cause opportunistic infections that kill people with HIV/AIDS. The only thing that Jemima did different was started treating her water. And because of that, she was able to regain her health. And her health had been very poor. She was down to 70 pounds and literally was on her deathbed. But when she started drinking purified water, she was able to regain her weight. She stopped having persistent diarrhea. So she was able to intake the nutrients from their food and be healthy. And now she teaches about the importance of safe drinking water and HIV/AIDS prevention. So you can provide clean drinking water for only 2 pennies a day and critical antiretroviral therapy costs about $1 a day. So it's almost a rounding error in the care for a person with HIV/AIDS. So it just makes sense to incorporate clean drinking water into one of our top global health priorities, treating HIV/AIDS.
Great. Jeff?
Well, thanks, Helene, and thanks again to CSIS and CARE and the World Affairs Council for really raising the profile of this issue. Let me start by maybe broadening the scope and then narrowing it down a bit. I have the privilege of serving as chair of the Global Advisory Council to the World Economic Forum on Water Security. They have a host of advisory councils. And one of the outcomes of some of the work that we've done is to really try to take a look at the role that water plays. And it obviously plays a huge role in public health, and I'll come back to that in a second. But if you imagine sort of a wheel with water at the center, it has tremendous impacts as well on an interdependence with agriculture, obviously, with energy. You need water in many cases to generate energy. It has a disaster relief component in every natural or man-made disaster. Water relief is central. Gender equity and empowerment, huge implications. Ecosystem and habitat, you know, freshwater ecosystems and healthy habitats that are really watersheds being nature's water factories, without which we don't have safe water for public health. And then economic development. So if you sort of look around that wheel, you see water has many, many facets of impact. And in some ways, I think, Helene, that's part of the challenge, that it's sort of like wallpaper. We see it, but we don't see it. It's so ubiquitous. I think with respect to the public health challenge, clearly, you know, the world is full of seemingly intractable problems. Safe water access and sanitation is not one of them. We know what needs to be done, and Greg has just alluded to the great work P&G is doing, and my company at Coca-Cola, we're working in partnership on these issues as well. We have the solutions. It's simple things like hand washing in many cases, or chlorine, as well as other more complex challenges. But what we lack is really the leadership and the political vision to get on with it and tackle it. And I think part of the barrier there is that, unlike other public health challenges, there are no breakthroughs in this space. There's no silver bullet. Merck or Pfizer is not going to come up with a vaccine to cure waterborne disease. And nobody in this room is going to catch diarrhea by somebody who flew in on an airplane with a waterborne disease. It just doesn't work that way. So it's not a direct, palpable threat in the way other communicable or in the way some communicable diseases are, and in the way in which we could theoretically innovate solutions through research and development. So it's a complex challenge. It has many solutions, not one. It's sociological, cultural. And deeply rooted in the sort of the fabric of the development challenge. And I think that's one of the aspects that has made it hard to raise the profile because it is so embedded. And I think one of the things that we can do is, as others have alluded to, is do a much better job of really storytelling, of making it real, and talking about results and impacts, because the results and impacts and the leverage in this space is tremendous. I mean, we can do more with scant resources to advance public health, I believe, in the water and sanitation area than in many others. And so it's a great opportunity.
Well, great. Listening to you all, it makes me think water is really cool. I mean, you're great, great spokespersons. But in that vein, I would particularly like to ask the two of you who work inside of big corporations. It's not always easy to get companies to embrace these sort of issues. And yes, particularly in the case of Coca-Cola, water is so essential to your business. But I think you've really gone beyond just what's necessary to assure clean water for your products. Could both of you say a little bit about what it took for you to get this on the radar screen for your own companies And it, you know, I say that because I think, you know, we talked earlier in some of the panels about the win-win between the commercial side and the social side, but it's not always that easy. And I think some of the lessons that both of you have learned might be useful more broadly as we think about this intersection between the private sector and some of these social good sorts of activities.
Sure. Well, I'll go first, and I'm sure Greg will have opportunity. You know, at Coca-Cola, as Helene said, water is really the first element of our supply chain. Without water, we don't have a business, and so it's very essential. And you know, I've been with the company now 8 years, and prior to my arrival at the company, we had been seeing increasing incidences of decreasing water availability or scarcity, as well as degraded water quality. And mostly in the growth markets, because you know that's where people are, that's where we're going to be investing to meet future demand, and that's also where some of the stress factors are most intense. So we started to really sort of get a handle on what does this mean for our business, and rather than issuing a statement out of Atlanta that just sort of put an edict out there across our global franchise system, and we are arguably the world's largest economic organization operating in 206 countries with over 1,000 bottling plants and almost 800,000 associates distributing, you know, product around the world every day. So we reached out to each of the operators at the plant level and asked them to give us information in 300 question survey around water issues, social, environmental, economic, et cetera. And we got a 95% response rate, which in a franchise system like ours is tremendous. So we got a tremendous amount of information. And what that process really informed us of was that whereas in the past we'd been focused on things like water quality in the plants, wastewater treatment, the kind of operational footprint of a plant manager, that we needed to really go to school and understand the watersheds that support our business and the shared users of those watersheds and the issues surrounding water in those communities. Because water, unlike other commodities, if you will, is not just a molecule. It's cultural, it's social, it's religious, and it has very deep roots. And if we don't learn to respect water, we are going to lose our license to operate in these communities, especially where these issues are challenging. So we set about a process of really working across our global system to put in place a framework and a series of partnerships with U.S. Agency for International Development, with the World Wildlife Fund, with the United Nations Development Program, working with CARE, working with the French Development Agency, the German Development Agency, many others, to put in place a series of programs that would help us better engage in communities around water resource management. And I have to say, the traction that we've gotten has been really tremendous, because I think everybody, whether you're sitting in Malawi or in Mongolia, the localness of our business is really the sort of distinguishing feature. So we don't direct those operations from here. Those are local bottlers, local community businesses, and connecting with the right players to help deliver benefits around safe water access, productive use of water, and watershed management. Is something that our system has really gravitated towards.
So I'll answer the question, but I just want to make sure that the record has it. You said we were cool.
Yeah, on the record.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what that gets us.
It don't mean a lot with my daughter. So that's cool. So why is PNG working in the water space? The line isn't quite as clear as it is for a company like Coke. We don't sell water, but we did create the Children's Safe Drinking Water Program, and it has tremendous value to our company. And it breaks down into three main areas that I'll just briefly touch on. One is our own employees. So we have more than 100,000 employees, and this is a source of inspiration for them. The fact that we're devoting resources, significant resources, to address one of the big global issues is a huge source of pride, and it's very visible. It's more visible inside the company than outside. And we have measured that it helps us retain employees. It helps us to attract the best recruits possible. The other is in the area of important stakeholders, or license to operate. I was talking with the ambassador from Kenya today, and he knew about our investment in our Children's Safe Drinking Water Program, and that helps us gain access to new markets. For example, we've learned that some of our ways that we're distributing our water purification packets when we're doing social marketing, where we're doing women-to-women selling, well, we've seen that not only can we use that as a way to sell in a not-for-profit fashion our water purification packets, but they also want to buy some of our brands that are for-profit. And in fact, quickly it's become a large source of income for women to sell our brands like Pampers diapers or Always Feminine Protection products. For-profit products that help us grow our business, but also products that are very much needed to improve lives. And the last area is we've even seen that our Children's Safe Drinking Water program can help grow our business, our for-profit business in the U.S. And I'll give you one example of that. And I think it'll be important for thinking about later today when we're talking about how do Americans feel about global health. We have, as a little bit of background for this, you have to understand we have something called the Brand Saver. It's a coupon booklet that goes in Sunday papers, and it has high discount coupons, like $2 off Olive Olay or $1 off Gillette razor blades, all P&G products. So you can redeem these coupons and save money for products hopefully you're probably already using anyway. And once a year for the last 4 years, we've themed it to water. And it's very interesting to see if Americans would care about water. So every coupon you redeem gives either a liter or a day of clean drinking water. So we collect the funds and they go to our partners like CARE to run these programs. A couple of years ago, we ran it in March. And every coupon gave a day of clean drinking water. The day after the Brand Saver coupon was in the papers was the week of the largest sales in P&G's history in the U.S. So Americans do care and quite a bit about global health issues. If you give them, I think part of that was the transparency of, you know, one coupon was going to give one day of clean drinking water.
Yeah, so real connectedness.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So it touches on some of your comments touch on the whole issue of partnerships. And we're going to have a panel specifically on partnerships later. But I think in this area, partnerships have been critical. And Christine, you've been at the core of pulling together partners here in the Atlanta community to begin working even more and more on this issue of safe drinking water, health, global health, hygiene, sanitation. Could you say something about some of those partnerships and give examples of why those have been so important in the work that you do at Emory?
Thanks, Helene. Actually, I have to say that it's really because of Jean Gang Carosa that we have these partnerships. And I think this is really part of Jean's vision that we would all be together in this big room with all of the groups in Atlanta and beyond Atlanta that work on water and sanitation, and this has made it happen. So,
could
first of all,
yeah, could we ask Jean to stand up with this? And his name has come up several times, and he really is. Both Jean and his wife have been a real inspiration for those of us at CDC and Emory and people working on this issue of water everywhere. So thanks to both of you.
Yeah, I think so. It was Jean's persistence and his vision that he noticed there were all of these groups in Atlanta working on water and sanitation and health. And so through Jean's persistence, we started meeting together, and now we have this Center for Global Safe Water hosted at Emory that includes CARE and Georgia Tech and the CDC and the Carter Center, and it's a growing consortium. But I think what makes it successful is that these groups bring complementary skills, but a shared vision, a shared goal. And so we've had years now of working together on different projects. And I think one of the projects that I want to highlight is the one that is with CARE. And it's in Kenya. It's our Swash Plus project. This is school-based water sanitation and hygiene, now in its sixth or seventh year. And this has been funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And it shows the power of this partnership because it's a combination of an implementation project, as well as a research project, as well as learning and advocacy. And this project has led to findings that have influenced the policy of the government of Kenya. And Kenya has used these findings to make changes in their budget and changes in their educational system. So it's been a very successful demonstration of the power of our partnerships. We need research because we need information, we need data for decision making. We need advocacy to take the learning coming from that research and get it to the decision makers who need that information, who will use that information. And the SWASH Plus project has been a very successful example of that because there was advocacy rolled into the project right from the beginning. And it was really CARE's expertise with advocacy and with working with governments that made that part successful.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. You know, we often talk about the implementation side of the work that we do, whether it's water, global health, but I think another part of what our legacy of leadership is in the United States has really been creating the knowledge that also helps to shift policies. And I think that cannot be underestimated because we can do project by project, but if we're not taking the learnings from those and then using those to make sure that we're shifting policies to support the things that we know work, then I think, you know, just half the job is done. So, you know, moving back to Greg's for a minute, you know, again, on the notion of the issue of partnership, you know, one of the things I've heard you say often is how important having implementing partners, like whether it's CARE or others, has been to your work. And, you know, we talk often about how the private sector is working in emerging markets as if it's, you know, that company directly to the community without thinking about, you know, how have these kinds of partnerships enabled you to do some of the things you do. And so it'd be interesting to hear about your experience around that. And Jeff, you may have something to add as well.
For us, it's very clear. So, and that is that we would have no success if it wasn't through partnerships. The example is our Children's Safe Drinking Water program, where we first tried it ourselves as a for-profit effort, trying to provide water purification packets that really their niche is in far rural areas where the water is very dirty, where people are drinking out of swamps and rivers and things. And when we tried to invest ourselves to build the infrastructure to provide the packets, we were able to provide a million packets a year. That wasn't enough to create a positive return on investment. In fact, it was creating a very negative return on investment. So not only was it not for profit, it was a big loss. So instead, we switched it to a not-for-profit effort where we teamed up with groups like CARE, who are deep in the rural areas, already there, and we've gone from providing a million packets to over 100 million packets. So it's clearly the difference between failure and success in this case. A good example is the response that P&G had with a number of partners to the Horn of Africa crisis, the drought and famine. And the areas that we needed to reach are very remote. I visited them in November, and it was a very long 2 days car ride just to reach the area where we then went out to visit households. And so we did that. We went from household to household randomly to see if people had received the water purification packets, if they had received the important behavior change communication. And it was extremely heartening to see that they had, and they were using the packets. And the water sources were horrific. In fact, our product makes water clear, and you can see what people would have been drinking once things settled down. And one family treated their water, and at the bottom was a big parasite from a cow that they would have been drinking if it wasn't for these packets. And so it's very hard. We reached over, working with CARE and PSI providing the supply chain and Save the Children and others, we reached more than 2 million people. And this is another example of how and why you need to integrate water with nutrition. Because if a child has malnutrition in an area with really nasty water like that, they're going to have persistent diarrhea. So the food that you give them, the critical food to bring them out of, the ready-to-eat foods to bring them out of malnutrition, if you have persistent diarrhea, there's not enough time in the GI tract to absorb all the nutrients. But if you give them clean drinking water, the diarrhea stops. So they get better faster. The nutrition goes further with a very small investment. The standard of care for a severely malnourished child now is a ready-to-eat food like Plumpy Nut. Well, you can give clean drinking water for 40 times less than you can give a day of ready-to-eat food. So it just makes sense to integrate them. So for the same amount of money, you can reach more kids.
Let me ask you another question before we move on to Jeff. You, in your comments, touched on the whole behavior change and how important that is to these efforts. I know you've had a lot of experience with that. Could you maybe give a vignette or talk about some of your experiences on how to go about the behavior change, the soft side of this part of the business? Because you're not in the business of drilling holes, and a lot of your work does hinge on changing behaviors.
Yeah, so we're focused not on providing water access, but providing clean, safe drinking water. So it's more, once you have water, how do you make it safe? Or if you're so remote that you don't have clean drinking, how you can make it safe? And what we've seen is that as much as whatever the technology is, whether it's PNGs or ceramic filter or simple chlorine, the biggest cost is making sure that people know how to use it and use it correctly with behavior change communication efforts. So we do invest a lot in that, and it's very important. And what we've measured is that one of the most important ways you can change behaviors is the same that Christine mentioned, and that is going through schools. And so the effort in Kenya, for example, started out of work that CARE started doing with CDC, reaching a few schools, providing simple chlorine bleach to treat water. Then P&G started doing it with our packets. The CDC came in and measured the CARE effort and found that providing clean drinking water in school reduced school absenteeism by 26%. And it was sustained over a long period of time. And just as important as that, the kids work as positive change agents in the community. And so we saw that doing that efforts in schools resulted in a threefold increase in household water treatment products in the community. So behavior change is absolutely critical, and we know how to do it. As Jeff said, we know how to do these things, and providing clean drinking water to kids in schools is something that is well within the reach of the international community if we focus on it. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you may want to comment on some of those same issues, but you know, one of the things that also strikes me that Coca-Cola has that is one of your real assets is the whole supply chain. I mean, you can get, all of us have had the experience of going to any corner of the world and being able to find a can of Coca-Cola. How does that incredible supply chain and distribution system help you in this effort, but also more broadly in some of the efforts in global health? And what are some of the lessons that we maybe can learn from that incredible expertise of, going that last mile? Because, at the end, in a lot of what we're talking about is how do you get to that last mile? How do you get, whether it's access to water, whether it's nutrition, whether it's medicines, but that getting that last mile is such a critical part of this.
Sure. Well, absolutely, and I think one aspect of that supply chain is what I mentioned earlier, which is the sort of the local bottling franchise model of our business, which actually, when the first bottler in Chattanooga received the rights to bottle Coca-Cola in 1896, it was really because of water, right? Water weighs 64 pounds a cubic foot. It's very heavy. It's heavy to move. So. Selling the syrup and having somebody add the bubbles and the sweetener and put it into the water makes a lot of sense. And that model still exists today. So one of the reasons you can get a Coke anywhere is that we have local franchise bottlers with local distribution systems rooted in local communities everywhere. And really what we're able to do, I think, and we've just begun to scratch the surface around safe water access and sanitation, is to leverage that ubiquitous access that we have, which is really very powerful, to be a catalyst for positive change. Our CEO, Muhtar Kent, talks about the golden triangle of partnership between business, government, and civil society, NGOs, academia, and really bringing that to life using Coke's local presence is something that we've been very involved in. So we've been working with USAID and the Water and Development Alliance in 23 countries now. And have touched and brought safe water access to over 500,000 beneficiaries in that partnership. We also have a signature program in Africa called Replenish Africa Initiative, which has a goal of helping provide safe water access to 2 million Africans by 2015. And we're at about 1.4, so we're well on our way to meet and hopefully exceed that goal. And one aspect of that, again, in partnership, and Greg's mention of the consumer engagement, which I think is very important, an example of sort of how we've sort of activated that in Africa. During the World Cup in South Africa, we worked with FIFA, and so that the trophy tour that went around Africa, we made sure that as a major sponsor of the trophy tour, that there was a safe water project associated with every stop of the trophy to raise awareness around safe water access in Africa. And we made a commitment that for every goal kicked during the World Cup, that we would help provide safe water in partnership to a community in Africa as well. And so that was part of the awareness raising and engagement of consumers and communities that we've been involved in. So I think really seeing ourselves as a catalyst. Our Chief Sustainability Officer, B. Perez, will be speaking more about this, mm-hmm. I think, at lunch today.
Great. I am going to ask people to start lining up at the microphones if you have questions. I'm going to ask a couple more questions, but do want the audience to have a chance to participate as well. So please do line up to the microphones. Christine, you know, several of the comments that people have made in this panel and before talked about how this kind of work changes the institution and the people in the institutions that are involved in global health, global water. You know, I know from my own days of doing research that once you start looking at really engaging with communities and thinking of research in a very practical way, it does change the way you think. It changes the relationship of researchers to their subjects. Sitting in an academic institution, it'd be interesting to hear how you feel the engagement in this has changed the way you do research, changed the culture within the School of Public Health, and what has this really looking at having research that helps to drive policies, research that helps to really shift how we do our programs, has really perhaps changed the research framework to a certain degree?
Oh, thank you, Helene. That's a great question. You know, I think sometimes the word research doesn't have a good connotation, especially sometimes with NGOs. So sometimes we have changed, I'll say, we do applied research. We don't just sequence genes. We work on how to develop a better toilet. But now I'm even changing how I describe research to say you need data for decision making. So that's maybe even a better word than applied research. But it's trying to fill some of these information gaps. And there are still important, I think, information gaps both in technology and also in sort of service delivery strategies and behavior change strategies. So there is a role for academia in developing better technologies and better strategies for implementation. For example, when we think about the problem of sanitation, for many parts of the world, it's really not going to be feasible to have flush toilets and sewage pipes and sewage treatment plants in all of the world. And the Gates Foundation has issued this grand challenge to reinvent the toilet. We need better technology for sanitation that can be applied in places where water is scarce. So there is a need for actual research to develop better technologies. There's also a huge demand of our students, of our young people. There's tremendous interest in our students in global issues, and especially in global water and sanitation. So when our Center for Global Safe Water now has our annual open house, we have more than 50 students coming, pounding on the door. They want to work with CARE. They want to work with the Carter Center. They want to work on water and sanitation issues. I think another place where academia contributes is with building capacity. So not just training our students, but working in partnership with CARE and with some of your partners on the ground to provide in-service training to professionals and build that human capacity on the ground to manage, operate technical systems, but also to work in consumer behavior change. And I think that one fruitful partnership between academia and private business is that you are geniuses at delivery of services, at creation of demand, And it's somewhere, I think, where corporations are really going to play a key role in the science of scaling up, of working with governments, working with NGOs, working with businesses in country to scale up, because otherwise it's just, no matter how many drops there are, there's still drops in a bucket, and it's that reaching scale where I think the corporations have true genius that they can pass on to partners in country.
Well, you're not only cool, but you're also a genius. That's you just. we have a question over here.
Thank you. I'm Lakshmi Karan with Riders for Health, and I want to thank you for sharing innovative models and how to scale them. My question from those with the private sector is, what are one or two bottlenecks you are currently facing as you build partnerships to access folks in the last mile? As you share your successes, it'll be helpful to know what are some of the bottlenecks you're experiencing. Thanks.
Great.
I think that, I feel very strongly that if people really understood, if broadly there was awareness that, you know, more kids die from diarrhea than HIV, AIDS, and malaria combined, right, they knew the problem, and they knew that this is easily addressed. We can prevent the illnesses from diarrhea. Then people would be inspired to act. So I think that it is an issue of building awareness, particularly in the U.S., which is so generous in helping. The other part of that I'm really passionate about that Helene mentioned in her opening comments, and I think Jeff mentioned briefly, but I think it's important to come back to, is in building that awareness, we need to reinforce that water is a woman's issue. Because it really is. I mean, the greater impact on women and girls from water is very important, and people need to understand that. You know, I spend a lot of time in Africa, and I see the fact that women spend so much time collecting water and collecting firewood because they know they're supposed to boil water to make it safe to drink if they don't have another technology. But that doesn't work very well for them, so the kids get sick, and they spend a lot of time taking care of the sick children. You can reverse that if you engage women with tools to help them make their water clean. And so it's them that take charge of making their water safe for their family. They don't have to spend as much time on boiling water. And so they're part of the solution. So I think this making sure that people understand that water is a woman's issue and women are the secret to addressing the issue is very important.
Yeah, I would just build on that, and clearly the gender implications of this agenda are tremendous. We have, and you'll probably hear more about it at lunch, a commitment to empower 5 million women entrepreneurs by 2020 through our global system, and clearly, you know, the impacts of water and the opportunity to leverage that is going to be very, very important, because this is an issue that impacts women and girls, sanitation especially in terms of staying in school and the importance of that, and we've seen lots of evidence of that. Just to go to the question, you know, for us, I think at Coca-Cola, it's not so much the last mile, because we kind of are the last mile. It's really more about the bottlenecks or the challenges are about scale. How do we drive scale? And that goes to Christine's comment. And I think one of the things that we're just beginning to get traction with is something that Senator Isaacson mentioned earlier, our partnership with Safe Water for Africa and Water Health International, and you know, the using the entrepreneurial spirit of people to engage in water provision at the village level in ways that will allow them to generate incomes, allow them to then reinvest in their communities and expand their business, thereby expanding access. And so I think, you know, the sort of the entrepreneurial model, not big business, but little business, but supported and helped with the tools and the support that we can help provide, can rapidly help scale up solutions that are truly sustainable because they engage that entrepreneurial spirit, which is infectious and really can scale very quickly. And we're very excited about some of those opportunities.
Great. My name is Janet Russell. I'm probably the least academic person in this room. I own a travel agency, and I'm the president of the Association for the Promotion of Tourism to Africa for the Southeast. I also serve on the board of an NGO in Western Kenya. Next week, we dedicate our fifth well inside of our 300-girl student boarding school, because we have found that the water inside of the compound, which we sell to the villagers, then makes the villagers protect the school. But One of the issues I'm glad you brought up, sir, about water and women is one of the greatest threats to women's health is violence around the globe and to children. And the longer women have to spend on the road to gather water, the more they are the objects of violence. And I want to know how you think we can partner, or someone needs to address the issues of water safety, good health, which means no violence against women and children.
Well, I think it's a tremendous point. We would love to learn more about that and sort of see how we can better connect some of those relationships. Absolutely.
On a personal note, I've advised many of my clients, when all else fails, brush your teeth with Coke.
We appreciate that very much. All the more reason.
And Crest, I hope.
All the more, yeah. Nice combination.
Dr. Gale and the panelists, thank you for providing us the tremendous information and opportunity. I'm Jalal Zubairi from Morehouse School of Medicine. I'm a pediatrician and engaged in a global program in Haiti. And Dr. Gale, by the way, my office is right a block from your headquarters. And one of the things that I've found challenging is also to connect with people like you, because you're always traveling. So I like to maybe get a chance to get some information with you and see how you can assist us in as we expand our educational program in Haiti. And actually, I'm just in the process of getting an elective course for Haiti for our the medical student. We want some support in that. But my question is that, I mean, as I go there every year almost to Haiti, in a small country like this, which is right in our backyard, and we hear a lot about collaboration and the need for people to come together to do this thing. Haiti is a very small country. And with all the media attention, especially since the earthquake a couple of years ago, I mean, you would expect that we will have enough resources collected through the donation and the generosity of American people and the various governments. But it's still, you see the problems. You know, they're tremendous. And one of the things that, as I was doing some research and putting this program together, I found out that Haiti is called the NGO capital of the world. We have more than 5,000 NGOs in a small country like that. So my concern is that while we do this with all the goodness of our heart and all the academicians and people from Coca-Cola and other big, companies try to get together and do the right thing, there should be a better way of coordinating, and so that we are not really, everybody's not creating their own, you know, separate set of wheels, and we make it better, I think. So there should be some program, maybe it should be coordinated through the consulate or embassies, where we know that who's doing what, and so that we collaborate rather than everybody, little group is going to do that. I think there's a lot of waste of resources, and I would just challenge you guys in terms of coming together and suggesting a way for people to get the information and not repeat, and so that we can get more bang for the buck in this time of austerity that we are facing. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your comments. And on the first one, it's part of why this forum of Atlanta Partners, I think, is so important, because we do have people who are right around the corner doing work that would be useful to collaborate on, and we just don't know it. And so, hopefully between our staff, different care colleagues who are here, the CDC colleagues and Emory, et cetera, we can think about ways that we can do more with the work that you're doing. I think your point about Haiti is one that's very well taken. I mean, clearly, we can't do for a country. A country really has to, we can help to build that capacity. And it really is the role of a country itself to be able to help to coordinate the variety of different actors that, that come into their country. In the situation of Haiti, we all know that Haiti is incredibly weak. Its infrastructure is weak. Its government is weak. We probably contributed, we, the United States and other countries, probably contributed to some of that. I think it is a very complex issue of a country that has had repeated after repeated crises where the community has gone in, the international community has gone in and tried to help, and in some ways perhaps has created more chaos. That said, I think it is a good lesson to all of us about how we work when we're working in partnership, and how do we do it in a way that helps to strengthen the capacity for a country to enter into that partnership. And to help coordinate those activities. But, I think, unfortunately, the situation of Haiti is not what I think it's not what any of us would want it to be right now. And I think we, though, as Atlanta institutions, could think about how we work together in a way that presents a much more united or a much more coordinated front in the work that we're doing there. And another topic that, you know, maybe we could use as our growing agenda of things that we can do in partnership here in Atlanta. As I see the number of people who are now at the mic and the amount of time that we have, I think maybe what we'll try to do is to, if people will just make very brief questions or comments, we'll cluster them together and then have our panelists respond in a general sense to the comments or the questions. But please keep them very brief because I think we have about 7 minutes to wrap up. Eric.
Thanks. Eric Mintz, CDC. I'll be as brief as I can. I want to thank the organizers of this conference. I do think it's going to catalyze some good synergy, and I've had the pleasure and the privilege of working with all of the panelists here. I want to thank them as well. I'm 1,000% in favor of improving water quality and saving lives, and I think we can innovate new technologies, we can improve existing ones, and we can make them all less expensive, and that's how we get to scalability and sustainability, and I applaud your efforts. It's been terrific working with you. There's one other thing I want to thank you for, and it sometimes gets overlooked, and that's about water quantity or water security, and I want to applaud especially P&G and Coca-Cola, your efforts to reduce the amount of virtual water, the water you use, the water that goes into the manufacture of the goods you sell. I think that eventually becomes a health issue. It's clearly an environmental issue and an economic issue, and it's one where corporate interests and community interests can overlap, and it you know, in the future, we all know as the population grows and the amount of available water is fixed, we're going to be dealing with that more and more as a health issue. So thank you for all of that. Your thoughts are welcome.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Dr. Anita Jackson. I'm with C Nanos, a small company out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And you all talked about waterborne diseases, but no one's really talked about what you've done or what you've innovated to remove the heavy metal toxins in water, like arsenic, lead, cadmium. Those certainly are causing lots of chronic and acute diseases and death. And so I'm interested in what you know and what technologies you've considered.
Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Dr. Spence Lewis, and I'm a graduate of the Morehouse School of Medicine, the Faculty Development Program. And they've been very supportive with me at Morehouse and Global Health and the work that I'm doing, particularly in Ghana. And I'm working in a rural area there. I specialize in malaria for children under 5 and maternal health. And one of the things that I've noticed that is that solar energy was not mentioned as a means of, as a tool of public health. And the area now that we're taking a mobile, I'm organizing, coordinating a mobile medical dental clinic to go into an area that has no grid. So they have no waste management program, nothing. So I've got great cooperation from the Ministry of Health of Ghana and from Morehouse School of Medicine to make this possible. Great. Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Dolores, and I'm just your basic citizen. And I was invited here today, and one thing that really struck out to me was nothing more valuable than water. Not gold, not silver, not diamond, because we all need water to sustain life. So my question is, have you ever thought about doing a marathon or a race for water that would start here in Atlanta and go throughout the world, same as we do for breast cancer, heart disease, and HIV?
Good afternoon. I'm Carolyn Aidman, and I'm building Emory University's Urban Health Initiative. We are a partnership with the School of Medicine, the Office of University Community Partnerships, and we reach out into the Atlanta community. And just 5 miles from here in Northwest Atlanta, we have food deserts, economic deserts, cardiometabolic syndrome, and a lot of the kinds of problems we've been talking about today. We have some of the worst air pollution in the country just 5 miles from here. So I would ask all who are interested in focusing some of your attention here where global is local, to get in touch with me, because we would like to bring all this incredible energy and intelligence to the city of Atlanta also.
Great, thank you. And final comment?
No pressure. My name is Frank Segru with KPMG, and I want to thank both Coca-Cola and also P&G for the work that they're doing, and would love to find out from them what they think that other companies can do to support you in the efforts that you do, because I know the passion that you guys show about water and sustainability, but we would like to know more about what we can do, other companies can do to help you and support you. So thank
Great.
You.
Okay, other companies, arsenic, solar, marathons, and global is local. So any of those topics that you want to touch on?
I'll start. Okay, so, well, actually, our technology that is very, very good at taking out arsenic and cadmium, and we've done work in Bangladesh and with others, so I'll be glad to talk to the person who asked the question later about that. And Dr. Eric Mintz, our collaboration to actually develop these packets started when Jingang Grossa connected us with CDC, and so the very, very development of the packets has been something we've done in collaboration with Dr. Eric Mintz, Steve Luby, and Rob Quick over the years. And thank you for your comments about, it's not only about water and health, but, you know, by understanding the consumers in Africa and the developing world, we can develop innovative products that reduce the amount of water in the products, and we have a number of those. Walks for water, runs for water are a great idea. We have one of our brands, Pantene, one of the leading hair care brands, that's doing just that. And more importantly, we have school kids that are doing it around the U.S., and we're teaming up kids in the U.S. and Canada with kids in Africa through the group H2O for Life, with a partnership with Rotary, P&G, Africare, and H2O for Life. And this is a really good way to build awareness and get kids involved in America and have them see how lucky they are and how they can give back to other places.
Mm-hmm. Great. Christine?
So just a couple comments. I guess I'd like to go back to the Haiti issue and the issue of coordination and add on to that and say, not only is there a need for coordination, but we really need to look at what interventions work and what are not working. You know, we really have to be honest and transparent about that, because there are some interventions, some technologies that are not working or not appropriate, and we don't have the money or the effort to waste anymore on that. As Senator Isaacson said, we need results, and we need to be really honest about evaluating and understanding what's working and why things are working in some places or not working in other places. So I think that's an important issue linked to the need for coordination. I wanted to point out to the woman from Emory that we are actually doing water research in Atlanta, because in fact, by working on research in Atlanta, we share many of the same problems that other parts of the world share. So when we talk about our Center for Global Safe Water, it includes Atlanta. We have problems with infrastructure, especially in our distribution systems. We have health outcomes associated with that. We have had water shortage problems, drought problems. So I think it's through working together on Atlanta problems that in some ways makes us even better able to work on water and sanitation problems in other parts of the world. So thank you for your observation. It's very true. I think we've learned a lot from our water issues in Atlanta, and those of you who live here, you know that we have a lot of them. And then the last thing I'd like to point out is that working together, we also have put together a new initiative. The Atlanta Water Working Group has written a concept note led by CARE, and you have copies of this at the table. And this is looking at the integrated role of water, sanitation, hygiene, nutrition to reduce stunting and improve child health and well-being. So I just want to bring that to your attention and urge you to take a look at that. And again, it illustrates the power of partnerships, because many people in this room have sat down together and put these ideas together, but led by CARE, by Peter Lockery and Brooks Keene. So I just want to acknowledge that and draw your attention to that. Thank you.
Jeff.
Great. Well, very briefly, Eric, thank you for the comment on sort of our supply chain and working with our suppliers. clearly agricultural supply chain efficiency in terms of the embedded water piece is most critical, and we've been leading an effort to create a standard for efficient sugarcane cultivation and production called Bonsucro, which is now launched with WWF and various other partners. So very, very focused on that. Great question from Dr. Jackson about heavy metals and other contaminants. That's an area, obviously, that we know a lot about, given our commitment to quality and safety and everything that we manufacture and make. One of the projects that we've just launched a pilot with is with the innovator Dean Kamen, who has worked with us to create the Freestyle, the new fountain dispensing machine with 106 options. And if you haven't tried it, I highly recommend it. A little commercial right there. We're rolling them out. But he's a great inventor. He's done kidney dialysis, the Segway machine, et cetera. And we're working with him on a vapor, on a water distillation purification technology. We've just piloted it in Ghana. It will take any sort of contaminated water, and because it uses distillation, it is capable of producing absolutely pristine distilled water from even the most contaminated water sources. And so we're in a partnership with him to explore where we can take that technology. And there are others that fit in that space, but we're very actively engaged in that. The colleague from Morehouse on solar, absolutely. One of the things that we're very excited about in our women's empowerment agenda of 5x20 is a project that we've launched in India on solar coolers, right? So empowering women with solar-powered coolers that also allow them to engage in sort of in cell phone charging or have light in the evening in their village off-grid. So not only is it an opportunity to offer a chilled beverage and expand our supply chain and create incomes for these women as entrepreneurs, but it also has ancillary services. And we're in discussions with some telecoms companies in Africa about joining forces between Coca-Cola and telecoms, both of which need electrons in off-grid applications. The public health dimensions of that, I think, are very interesting to explore. And we're certainly open to dialogue on that in your work in Ghana. On Marathon, I mentioned FIFA, some of the work that we did there. I think this is really a powerful opportunity. I know P&G has done some great work. We supported, along with Dow, the Blue Planet Run, which was a global marathon, to raise money and awareness. And I think that, as a consumer goods company with a pretty heavy marketing focus, you can expect to see more from us in that space. But I think connecting with consumers is really valuable. And then lastly, Frank, around getting other businesses to engage in this challenge. Tremendous opportunity. There's an organization called the Global Water Challenge that was established, five or so years ago now, as a platform to try to bring businesses together, because this question that we heard about Haiti of all this balkanized effort, everybody's off doing their sort of one-off together, sort of an NGO and a business, and how do we get critical mass and how do we get coordination? And so if any of you are interested, I would direct you to the Global Water Challenge as a platform for that, as well as in our own discussions with our own suppliers, KPMG being a partner. So I'm sure Frank will find a way to engage you. So thank you.
Well, great, and thanks again to all three of our panelists. I think this has been a really stimulating discussion, and I hope that we have raised some interesting ideas, and we really appreciate the audience participation and the great questions that we got from you as well. So thank you.